And we are live and we are back. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe De Leon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. I had the opportunity to play the new college football video game, so I'm, of course, in a mood.
What is 1 o'clock tomorrow? So 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2. I don't know how many, like 18 hours, I guess, before I get to play.
Yeah, but it's the middle of a Monday. You really going to get to play it tomorrow?
No, I don't. Actually, I don't play
the show tomorrow because I'm going to be on vacation. So
you'll have all that's true. That's true. There's also this thing called children. Probably not.
When they go to bed, you won't have anything going on. You can play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to play at some point tomorrow, but I am excited. But here's the good thing about not having it before everybody. Everybody else gets to mess up with the bugs, and I get to see everybody freaking out or having fun. I'm like, dude, it's a video game. It is a video game. Y'all need to relax. I am really interested to see if I can do this precision catching because I'm seeing the dude on Twitter who did Goat James as a tight end. Like, this guy's unfair. Like, this is an unfair, unrealistic situation.
I know what you're talking about. I watched the Ohio State tight end that basically made LeBron as a tight end, and it was hilarious. I kind of want to make a tight end. I made a running back. I always do a running back first. I've had a lot of fun. I already did my first season. I won the Heisman as a freshman at Jacksonville State. I did it on an All-American. I did not do it on Heisman. I would be too pissed off if I played it on Heisman. It wouldn't be very fun. But the tight end stuff looks pretty entertaining. I just don't want to have to block. That's kind of stupid to me.
When they did it in Madden, I liked it a lot. Like, I liked it. Why? How is it meaningless? You get to pancake.
Because you're not doing anything. I want the ball in my hands. I want to do more stuff. Realistic.
Blocking as the tight end or having 15 catches per game?
I don't know. I'd rather not call any run plays if I'm going to play tight end, though.
That is true. I am looking forward to it. A lot of people playing with LSU, which is interesting. It's also interesting to see that like 95% of their starters are not on this team last year. Seeing guys like Jeremiah Smith, seeing guys like Malachi Toney on the game has been really fun. Have you seen everybody freaking out, though, about West Virginia's playbook and running the football? I might have to change Lane Kiffin's playbook. Rich Rod got this thing rolling. If I can put 500-pound dudes at running back and give them the rock, you best believe that we're going to be doing this and giving some fat people some love around here, Joe.
I did the Miami playbook last year and it was unstoppable. And
I agree with you. It was unstoppable. It was a fun playbook to have.
Yeah, a lot of mesh. I love running mesh. I love running drag routes and a lot of slants and stuff and running a lot of inside zone. But my playbook, it doesn't have – even though it's better, they added more stuff to it because Miami added a bunch of like tight formations this year, and those tight formations are really fun to run out of. But the problem is, whatever reason, it's a lot harder to run mesh this year because I think that the big enhancement to the AI, your opponent, they're better at like reading what you're doing and reacting to it. So it's really hard to get open over the middle of the field when they're loading up the middle of the field. So
I might play with coaches, actual coaches on the game. Yeah. It's what I'm learning. Yeah. And they're wanting you to throw the ball deep on the boundary.
Yeah, I haven't played it enough in dynasty mode to know, but I want to try either that West Virginia playbook or I want to try the Michigan playbook. I'm kind of curious if that's going to be equally as fun running the ball because Jason Beck was doing some pretty creative stuff when he was at Michigan or at Utah rather.
I would assume that about 95%, if not larger than that, has the game by tomorrow. So it's going to be fun. I'm sure a lot of people aren't going to be – well, we're not going to be live tomorrow. A lot of people won't be tuned in general. And then that's the only problem. Tomorrow night I have the World Cup. So how am I guess I got to keep the World Cup on a smaller TV and then play it on the big screen.
Well, that's you should go live. You should go live really early in the day and then you can play the game.
Ironically, I'm going live at 6 p.m. when we were scheduled to be live because if you're not going to be here, why don't I just go live then?
Right.
So it is what it is. But you're not here to talk about the video game. I'm sure a lot of you are having fun with it. I'm glad that all of you are. Just means that college football is right around the corner. Not too long. Joe, Big 12 Media Day start this week. If something extremely pressing comes out, Joe and I still will be here, even though my man Joe will be on vacation. If something massive happens, we will talk about it then, but we would definitely will be monitoring Big 12 Media Days. We got a lot that we do need to get in touch and talk to about today. Urban Meyer kind of takes a little bit of a shot, I guess. I don't really know the intentions of Urban Meyer with Lane Kiffin. But Joe, I think that this is an overarching thing. I don't think that this is just Urban Meyer that we really need to discuss going into year one of Lane Kiffin at LSU, so we'll talk about that. Marcus Freeman, I thought the article this week with Marcus Freeman talking about doing the interviews with the NFL, I thought was pretty good. I mean, he gave a really damn good explanation as to why he had those interviews. There is one thing that of the 10 things he said, there's one thing I just don't believe him on, but he was pretty good in what he said. We'll talk about Marcus Freeman and his thoughts on the NFL, and then later tonight we will do an SMU deep dive as we continue on our path down that track. But before we do all that, do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Subscribe down below if you're on YouTube. Stop whatever you're doing. Go over to the YouTube channel. Subscribe down below. 61% of you are still not subscribed to the YouTube channel by watching. Do us a favor. It only gives us help. Tells our partners over at 24/7 that you actually like us. So do us a favor, hit that subscribe button and notification bell. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe as well. Want to talk about our good friends and partners over at 24/7 Sports? You can go over there and join their annual VIP membership today by using the promo code RJ60 at checkout. A lot of recruiting news is still on the horizon. Not only football, basketball and baseball also still on the horizon. 24/7 Sports coming out with their tops in the next upcoming basketball class. You can go over there and check that out as well. Where are these guys trending to today? You go over and use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. That's RJ60 at checkout. To use that promo code, you'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. All right, Joe, let's get into the show here. Urban Meyer had some really interesting words, as you mentioned in the pre-show. It wasn't a long segment here. But Urban Meyer came out this week and stated that Lane Kiffin has got to win a national title or LSU fans are going to revolt because, I guess, of all the money that has been spent and all the things that have been going on. Joe, as an LSU guy personally, I completely disagree with this. I don't think any LSU fan is expecting him to win a national title in year one. I do feel like that I have a pretty good pulse on the LSU fan gauge, and I don't think it's even remotely coming close. I don't want to say remotely coming close to natty or bust, because I do think that there's a playoff or bust kind of mentality. But, Joe, the Urban Meyer segment about the and I quote here from Urban Meyer, the weak and whack-ass LSU fans, the delusional LSU fans will riot if he doesn't win a national championship year one, I think is poorly worded. I think it coming from that specific person, it's also stupid and dumb. But I do think that there's an overarching theme about what Lane has got to accomplish in year one at LSU. I kick it over to you. What are your thoughts? Because I don't think it is natty or bust year one of any coach anywhere at any point at any time. What are your thoughts on Lane and what Urban had to say?
By the way, this made me think of we used to do the first year expectation segments, which I don't think we didn't really talk about this offseason. So maybe we'll do that because we still have some filler time over the next couple of weeks. But Blake, I think that you brought up a really good point with this where you have a really good pulse for LSU fan expectations. I have like a 10th, maybe even less than that, a 20th of an understanding just from loosely being involved with doing a show with you. I understand how LSU fans feel about certain things because I talk to you every single day. You tell me about how they respond to various things, and you can see and understand the feeling towards Lane Kiffin on social media. I agree with you. I don't think that the pulse here is at all connected for Urban Meyer and understanding what LSU fans want in year one. He also said in this podcast, it was a very brief segment. It was the top five most interesting coaches for 2026. I get it. It's the off season. You're looking to fill content before the Andrew Luck interview that came on in the second half. and it didn't really come off as fully thought out. He made a statement saying that he needs LSU to be within a swing of it. I don't really know what that means. Does that mean they get to the Final Four? Does it mean they get to the playoff? Does that mean they almost get to the playoff? Because, Blake, if that's what it is, if they win 9 games and they miss the playoff, we've said this on this show, that's a successful year. It's a first year in a new program in the SEC. What Kurt Cignetti did is the exception. Nobody is going to replicate that. Winning 9 games would be huge for Kiffin, and it would be massive for galvanizing the fan base, getting everybody locked in, and having a really big year too. Getting to a national championship seemed like he got way ahead of himself in describing expectations for Kiffin for this upcoming year. I also feel like what's been missed on this, the sentiment I've read into with LSU fans, they're so happy and excited about having Kiffin more than when they got Brian Kelly. It feels very different than Brian Kelly that I don't think that they would be pissed off and upset if they didn't get to the playoff. As long as they don't go 7-5 and have a really bad loss, I don't really think very many LSU fans are going to be looking at it in that lens. I don't really understand where Urban Meyer was coming from with this, and it was a bit out of touch, which was disappointing.
All right. Do I think that there's parts of the fan base, because of the media behind how much money was spent, that there's more expectations year one than maybe anywhere else in the country? Probably. Probably. What are you going to do, fire him? What are LSU fans going to do, revolt? And I also think it depends on how you lose. As an example, let's say you lose to Texas A&M. What if A&M's a playoff team? What if you lose to Texas? What if Texas is a playoff team? What if you lose to Alabama? What if Alabama's a playoff team? How did you lose? Because when we talk about Kiffin as an example, I think of Ole Miss in 2024, Joe. That might have been, talent-wise, a better team than what he had last year. I mean, Walter Nolan, Surtain Perkins, I mean, the older brother, Eumann Yellen. I mean, like, so it just depends on how it happens. In reference to Urban Meyer, he came back and refreshed to your point of they need to be in a swing of it. Okay, well, I can agree with you there. 9 games in the playoff, however you slice or dice it, I don't want to fight over those semantics. It is what it is. My problem with him would be, as an LSU fan, I am, whack-ass LSU fan base? This coming from a guy during the Zach Smith situation and openly and just completely having issues at Jacksonville, you think that you're the one to take shots? I mean, whack-ass LSU fan base. Delusional LSU fan base is what he called it. Were you delusional when one of your coaches had to get arrested and it got covered up? Like, so if you're going to take shots at people, you better not have skeletons in your own closet. Okay, that was the first thing as an LSU fan that I thought of. You know who else thought about it? LSU fans. Go see the comments now. Since I reposted it, go look at the comments. You can't go out there and say a delusional, whack-ass fan. But what's delusional about being tied for second since 2000 in national titles? Is that delusional? Name a fan base outside of Alabama that wouldn't want to be tied for second in football in national titles since 2000. I'll wait. Because everybody would want to clip on, be on part of that mountaintop. It's Ohio State and LSU. There's nobody outside of Alabama who can come in since 2000 and say, yeah, we've been there. We've been there. This generation saw arguably one of, if not the best, team of all time. They're not delusional. They don't want to go 7-5. 7-5 at LSU is what, Joe? It's a fireable offense. 9-3 might be a fireable offense, depending on how it goes for periods of time. Ask Les Miles. When Les Miles led the NFL in draft picks and kept losing to Nick, yeah, they got pissed off. They should have gotten pissed off. In reference to the overarching theme, however, to Lane year one, Joel, they still got a lot of holes to fill. Like, we see Levitt, we see Prince Will, we see Seton. Great players. Do I think that they're more talented than most teams in the SEC that they will go up against? Actually, I do. Joe, I started on this four-part series of breaking their schedule down. I can look at Ole Miss. Are you 1,000% sure that Ole Miss offensively is going to be ready to go when a whole offensive staff picks up and leaves? This is a second-year play caller there now. Texas A&M, they have in week four. Their offensive coordinators never called plays. So when you look at LSU's schedule as an example, it depends on how things go. You did spend a lot of money. I do think that they're going to be a really good team. But, Joe, I look at Steve Sarkisian as an example. Three of the last 4 years, either you've been one or two for highest rosters spent on. Has he won an Natty? Where is the outcry for Sark? Sark has been in the top three the last 4 years in roster building and NIL money spent. He hasn't won an Natty. Now he's gotten to the Final Four twice, so maybe that's where people just come off. The dude's in year one. I get he spent a lot of money. I get there's expectation to make the playoff. Their schedule is very difficult, even though there have been videos making it seem like I agreed with something I didn't agree with. The bottom line is if he goes 9-3, to your point, I think that's a building block for year two. I also believe, Joe, this is just a hot take, I think there might be we might have our first year of a 9-3 team getting in, especially with the ACC, the SEC, and Big 12 going to 9 conference games. I think those conferences will beat each other up a little bit more, and because of that, we could see a 9-3 team get in there. So I'm not even saying they can't get in the playoff there. Again, it just depends. The dude is in year one. You talked about Kurt Cignetti, and I thought it was significant. The last thing I'd say here, Kurt Cignetti didn't have a top 50 strength of schedule. Okay? So I think that year one situation needs to be put in a little bit more context than people saying, well, Kurt Cignetti did it in year one. Well, the two teams they faced off with in the regular season that had a pulse, he lost to, and then he got trounced by Notre Dame in the playoff. Now, he won a national title in year two, and good for him on it. But I'm not expecting him to come in here and just change this completely overnight. However, I still think that they might be one of the more talented teams in the country. Mm-hmm. And so it just depends on how you look at that. Joe, I think I think Jackson Harris, by the end of this, 7 months from right now today, Jackson Harris will be a household name. Just like Stribling be going into this. Didn't Stribling go in the second round, if I'm not mistaken?
I think he was the 49ers pick in the second round. It was Stribling. I'm trying to think of mixing him up with the other receiver, but he was one of them.
Top 45 draft pick, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then Trey Harris, who also went in the second round. I don't know if this kid's not better. Like, I really don't know. He's kind of cut from that LSU wide receiver cloth. So bottom line is, LSU fans will revolt. What are they going to do? They just fired Brian Kelly for $50 million. They're not going to fire him. What do you mean that they'll upheaval? That's just going out there and being lazy with a take.
Well, right. And I think it's a complete misinterpretation of the temperature of everything around Lane Kiffin. I actually think that what the real reality here is, theoretically, they go 9-3, or even if they go 8-4, LSU fans, 8-4 may be a little disappointment, but content if there are positive signs. 9-3, you're very happy. You just missed the playoff. You understand it's year one. You spent all that money. It's setting up for future success down the line. The real response, the negative response that I think comes out of it, comes from everybody around the country.
Agreed.
Because of everything that happened and the coverage that Lane Kiffin received for the way that he moved, the way that Ole Miss fans responded to the way that he moved, every single time that there is a quote from Chambliss, a quote from Golding, a quote from Kiffin himself, whenever somebody talks about this stuff, it builds back up the tension and the craziness from everybody across the country. It's not just from LSU and Ole Miss.
Lane hasn't spoken in 8 weeks, by the way.
Right. So, but remove Ole Miss and LSU fans from this entire thing for a second. The negativity and the vitriol will come out from fans across college football. They're going to come out and say, man, he is not ready to take this LSU team. He spent all that money and they didn't go anywhere. What an absolute mess. Everybody across the country is not going to have that same understanding of what was actually capably possible. And they're able to speak from that perspective because it doesn't cost them anything. You know, they can look at it from that perspective of, hey, this was a failure because they weren't committed to understanding what LSU was able to do at the beginning of the year and followed along the entire process. They can just toss out negativity and criticism for the heck of it because it's fun to do it. It's how this all works. People gang up on people because it's easy to do when people fail. People love to do it. It's how freaking social media works. Right.
They have 60 new players. I mean, right. At some point they're going to have to learn to come together.
It's going to take time for this to all work, but if there is going to be anybody that gets upset, it's going to be everybody on the outside, and apparently including Urban Meyer is going to be one of those people. It's not going to come, I would think, from the LSU side of things if they don't win a national title.
Well, here's another thing. Lane hadn't really talked in 8 weeks. What has he said? He's posted one time. It was about recruiting. But I did his whole rant and monologue on Thursday. You can go listen to it if you want to. Why Trinidad Chambliss, by the way, changing up his tune? Monday, he called Lane Kiffin the best offensive play caller on the sidelines. Thursday, he comes out and uses another outlet, Rivals and pun intended, to say, oh, man, screw them. They're our biggest rival. Why couldn't you do that at the Manning Passing Academy when you were talking about, did you get in that locker room and talk? What has Lane said? See, here's the thing that I think is interesting in covering the man daily. What has he done the last 8 weeks? What has he done? What has he said? Because there hasn't been one. He went on with Barstool, okay, and he talked about Ed Orgeron. He talked about a 9-game conference schedule. What else did he say? Did you listen?
I'm just being rhetorical.
He didn't say anything. Why are there companies constantly posting Lane Kiffin better beat Ole Miss? Joe, ESPN, by the way, ESPN put out a week 3 preview of LSU versus Ole Miss. They did a preview of the game. The man's not even talking. So to your point about it being more national, last time I checked, Louisville upset Miami this past year. Are we just going to forget that Jeff Brohm just doesn't constantly knock somebody off every single year that he's not supposed to? Clemson. Joe, I've been really diving into Clemson, okay? I might know more about Clemson than I need to. Mm-hmm. Are you sure that Vezina can't sling the pill? Because I went and watched the end zone copy of that spring game. Are you 1,000% sure? Because this little sucker can sling it. And I'm looking at the receivers. I'm like, maybe – I don't think they're going to be great. But at the same time, this kid's – I mean, he doesn't suck. Like, everybody's like, oh, the quarterback's – I don't know if it's not a better overall situation for them. So I do think it's going to come nationally. I just think it's really unfortunate. And I understand the frustration by LSU fans. Brother, you let Zach Smith do something egregious. You openly cheated on someone in public, and you're out here calling a fan base delusional? You're out here calling a fan base delusional when you got two absolute haymakers in your own closet. Please stop. So, I understand the frustration there. All right.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Enjoying the World Cup? If you want proper analysis, honest opinions, and plenty of laughs along the way, give The Rest is Football a listen. Gary Lineker, Alan Shear and Micah Richards break down the biggest games, the standout moments, and everything happening on and off the pitch with brilliant guests joining them throughout the tournament. Whether you followed football your whole life or you're just getting into it, they'll help you make sense of the drama, the tactics, the joy, and the heartbreak of the World Cup. Listen to The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on. Let's move to one of LSU's old rivals in Notre Dame, even though they never played a game. Marcus Freeman talked about this past week, Joe, about there was a lot of buzz surrounding him going to the NFL. A lot of great quotes in this article from Marcus Freeman about taking the interviews and understanding, like, hey, it kind of made me understand more about myself was the centric theme of this, I feel like. But he kind of put a little some of this to rest about going to the NFL. I don't think that he put to rest completely, because there's one thing that I disagree with him on. I don't about moving. Basically, in the end of this, I think he talked about Notre Dame being the best place for him right now. But he does kind of put the NFL rumors to rest at the current moment. Your thoughts on Marcus Freeman talking about him wanting to stay at Notre Dame during this whole process?
Yeah, this commentary was on Cam Hayward's podcast, who I believe he has, I think they played together at Ohio State briefly when they overlapped. And, you know, Cam asked him multiple times. He kept coming back around, asking him about it and trying to get him to talk about it. And I thought that Freeman, a lot of times we've listened to him, we've heard coaches address rumors about possibly going to the NFL or leaving to go to bigger programs, different programs, whatever it might be. And I think that there is such a distinguishable difference between a coach who is just giving you canned responses, like coached up PR responses, the nonsense of like talking about like, oh, this is where I want to be, and not fully addressing what actually went down. This is one of the most honest responses and perspectives on a flirtation with leaving a current job that I've heard from a coach. He was very, very direct about what went down. And a lot of the stuff that he said aligned with some of the things that I said at the time of the speculation of him potentially going to the Giants when I was covering the Giants coaching search and he was being brought up constantly with it. It was a very weird kind of moment for me for work, because I had to look at it from the Giants side. I had also look at it from the Notre Dame side. And a lot of the things that I said were, I don't think that he's going to take it, because I think, one, he understands it's not a fit for him to go to the NFL. It's not a fit for him to leave the Giants because they're a mess. And it's also an opportunity for him to learn what it's like on the NFL side. But most importantly, any good agent and any smart coach, anybody in any career field, is going to take an interview for something like this. Mm-hmm. You should always pick up the phone, go through an interview process, even if you have zero intention of doing it. If I got a phone call to move to Beijing to be the first college football host in Beijing, I'd pick up the phone and listen. I'd be curious to find out what it's like. You're not going to say, no, I don't want to hear about this. You at least want to take the time to know, because in this specific lens, he's got an agent. That agent is going to use that as an opportunity to reinforce resources, get a bigger salary. From my understanding, I think that this was something that Freeman used as an opportunity to get more NIL commitment and resource commitment in order for him to build the program the way that he wants to. And it's starting to show with back-to-back top recruiting classes and some really good transfer portal additions that flexibility is now translating and showing up way quicker than I think that anybody would have expected or anyone would have thought would have been possible. Now, I will say this. I think that this was really good timing with rumors that Mike Elko had been negatively recruiting against Marcus Freeman by going around telling recruits. And there was one 5-star linebacker recently that allegedly made the decision despite being expected to go to Notre Dame and then flipping his decision to Texas A&M, that Elko was going around telling these kids, hey, he's going to the NFL next year. This is last year. He's done. And I think that this was very smart on his part to answer these truthfully and directly, because kids watch these videos, they watch these clips, they see this stuff. I think that Freeman is going to get a lot out of this, and I think that I trust him. I don't think that this is a bunch of BS.
Do you want to yell at me?
Oh, great. Okay. What do you want?
I think rumors in recruiting like that about coaches saying something about another coach are rumors, especially when you miss on a prospect. I mean, 247 Sports is reporting that A&M, for the top six guys in their class, have committed over $10 million worth of NIL. That will be a record. So, yes, I can understand, and no one wants to be told that they lost a money fight. Nobody. I don't care if it's Notre Dame. I don't care if it's Texas. I don't care if it's Texas A&M. Nobody likes losing that. So what do you like hearing better? That Mike Elko was negatively recruiting? You have guys like Zenit's reporting that their top six players that are committed likely to make $10 million. I'm just going to say the kid probably went for money too. So I don't, you know.
I'm not saying that's not part of it, but Notre Dame pulled Simeon, it was down to them in Texas A&M. I think that this has been happening. They have been in the running for a lot of the same kids.
I understand that. Well, Simeon's number wasn't even remotely close to what Henderson was asking, not even remotely in the same stratosphere. I'm just saying that I feel like that always happens. However, I thought that everything that you talked about this being a flirtation, I think that's a great word to use. Let me explain. This is going to sound horrible. Stay with me until the end.
I knew you were going to do this.
You know, when you are talking to multiple girls before you get committed, and sometimes if you talk to another girl, it makes you like the other one that you're with. I really feel that's what Marcus Freeman just went through. He understood and loved the fact that he was being pursued by something and someone that's lucrative. Let's just understand something, and I'm not trying to buff you up. I know you're a Giant. It's a Giants fan. It's a New York freaking Giants. So, yes, you talked about earlier, even if Beijing calls, you're picking up the phone. This is the New York freaking Giants, okay? So I don't really give two Rudy Poos what you think about Marcus. You mean to tell me that Mike Elko wouldn't pick up the phone for the Dallas Cowboys? Spare me, okay? Because everybody's going to pick up that phone regardless of who you are as a coach. With that being said, I do believe him when he said, I like the flirtation, but it made me understand that this is where I need to be. He would go on to talk about Notre Dame. I highly suggest people go and read the article. However, there is one thing that I don't believe him on. It's not the NFL thing that I don't believe him on, because he feels like a college head football coach to me. Joe, the only coach that I can remember, and I think that this is just plausible, that had success after the fact of being a college coach and having a lot of success was Pete Carroll. And he went to Seattle and he won a Super Bowl. But Pete failed. Pete got fired in New England and then goes to USC and then was able in a second act go back and then be able to have success. He had to fail the first time. I understand that position coaches, coordinators may want to go to the NFL. Like, who is your boy from Boston College, went to Green Bay?
Halfley.
Okay. That's different because it's a different – this is Notre Dame. This isn't like a podunk Boston College. Shout out to all of our Eagles fans. I'm not trying to put down on you.
I don't think we have any. I can tell you right now.
Well, just in case, the New Balance School of the Northeast, you get what I'm saying. I don't know if I believe him that he sees himself in what he stated in the article, retiring at Notre Dame, because there is another coach that constantly gets tossed around in NFL circles, and that's Ryan Day. I feel like the real only, I don't want to say competition, okay? If Ohio State winds up one day, Joe, picking up that phone and calling Marcus Freeman, I think he's gone. I don't believe him that he says that he sees himself retiring at Notre Dame. I'm going to have to see him reject Ohio State to stay at Notre Dame. And I think that that's plausible. That's where he's from. That's where he went. That's where his family's at. but ain't nobody else coming to get him. Because if the New York Football Giants or other teams, because I would assume that there were other teams, some that still have coaches that are still employed, that talk to him. So I'll just be honest with you. I think there were a couple of teams down south that called him. And I'll just leave it at that. And I don't think he wanted to leave. And I think Notre Dame did a lot of things behind the scenes in NIL to keep him there. If all we're going to argue about is him saying that I see myself retiring here, yeah, I don't believe you. I think if Ohio State picked up the phone, you would 100% leave. That's neither here nor there. But here's the real thing to your point that you stated earlier. Let's say Mike Elko was doing those bad rumors to Marcus Freeman. I don't know. You sure as shit convinced me. Because it feels like that you flirted with other things and you came back to what you knew that you could have success in. I fully believe this, man. It wasn't the right time. And I think Notre Dame's got a top five head coach, semantically speaking, top five head coach in the game. And it's a massive win for them. And it also is a massive win to with all due respect, to continue to show the nation of Notre Dame's overall brand by him staying. Because if he picked up at the first sign of somebody else calling, Brian Kelly leaving, Marcus Freeman leaving, you know what the conversation would have been. What's going on behind the scenes with Notre Dame? Well, this time, nothing. This time, it was a Brian Kelly thing to leave. No, Marcus Freeman decided to stay. And I don't think in the article, the way that it came off to me and how I felt was that shit. They really, really are on the same page. And we talk about alignment so much. Like, you're going to have alignment with your college football video game now and raising these funds. Welcome to being a college football head coach. It tells me about how much the alignment at Notre Dame meant to him as well.
I think that it's understood. I don't think anyone is ever going to push back on you from the Ohio State take. I don't think anyone is going to push back that he would, if Ohio State came open and they called him, they said, Marcus, come home, take the job. I don't think any Notre Dame fan would think that's not going to happen. That's not impossible. Or that's not possible. It would be too much of an obvious circumstance for him to return to the place that he coached or he played at for him to go back to Ohio State. It makes too much sense. Any coach who has played somewhere is always going to think deeply if that opportunity arises. It happens all the time in the history of the sport. It happens all the time. There's also instances, though, where some coaches do turn that stuff down because sometimes they don't want to be that next guy in line to fill the expectations. They also don't want to get maybe sucked into a different chapter in their lives of maybe they've turned the page and they don't want to have to go back and backtrack to it, whatever it is.
Or children.
Yeah, that's it. He's got a lot of kids, too, is the other part.
97 of them. He needs to calm down. Marcus, calm down. You got 97 of them.
I think that at the end of the day, though, what's pretty clear, and this is everything that I talked about the NFL stuff, I really don't think that the NFL makes sense for him, and I don't think that it makes sense for every single college coach. There are some college coaches that are equipped for it and are built for it. The Pete Carrolls in the coaching world that have success in college winning national championships and in the NFL winning Super Bowls, they have experience coaching at both levels and deep experience coaching at both levels. You brought up Pete Carroll being a guy who got fired from the Jets, fired from the Patriots, failed twice as an NFL head coach, worked at USC. USC fans didn't even want him in the first place. And then he gets a chance with the Seahawks. When you have someone like Marcus Freeman, who's never coached in the NFL, I don't think it works. And I also think that his style of coaching doesn't translate. Just because there's more money does not mean that it is worth making the move. Because if you're at a program that is at a top 10 brand in the sport right now, as long as you're in that top 10 brand in terms of resources and commitment and brand recognition, you can capably win a national title. It is balanced at the top, nowhere else really, but balanced at the top to be able to win. And Marcus Freeman holds one of those jobs. Now, the one thing that was not talked about with this, and Cam Hayward did not ask him about it on his podcast, where these quotes came from, it was not discussed on him possibly leaving for other schools that aren't Ohio State or even leaving for Ohio State. I'm actually surprised that he didn't ask him about it. Maybe he did and he told him to cut it out. Cut it out of the edit or whatnot.
Well, hold on. If you're boys with somebody, you know that I wouldn't put you in that position. That's the first thing.
But they were teammates, though. Like, if I get the opportunity to interview a former teammate of mine in 10 years who's like a head coach somewhere, I'm going to ask him if he would ever. Actually, that did not go back to Rhode Island. What the hell am I talking about? But if it was like at a big brand like an Ohio State, I think it'd be worth asking that question. I think it'd be fun because I think that both sides understand that it's not like a serious question. But like, I really also don't think that he would ever leave to go to another program that's not Ohio State. Like when you try to tell me that LSU really wanted him possibly at the beginning of it.
They didn't really want him.
I know that they did. I never thought that was real. Like, I really didn't think that he was going to leave. Oh, dude, they could have thrown a ridiculous amount of money at him.
Going to leave either. It didn't stop the pursuit in wanting to have conversations with him. You know, with all due respect, in the NFL, there's a front office down south in the NFL that gave him carte blanche for everything, and he didn't even budge. I don't think he wants to come to the South. That's a whole different conversation for
I don't think he wants to leave in general, though, because, like, Florida fans and Penn State fans – They all talked about how that they were just like, oh, Marcus Freeman's our top candidate. We're going to go get him. And I don't think that he has a desire to go to any other school. It just doesn't make sense.
If you ask me what LSU's big board was, it was Lane, Dan Lanning, Marcus. I think Marcus came up because of the strong relationship that Verge has with him. Not that everybody else had with him. And Verge didn't really have any. I don't want to say he didn't have any say, but I mean, you get what I'm saying. If it got down to it, I mean, the whole article that came out with the, I'm glad we get to talk about this now. The whole article that came out with the Dan Lanning tied to the new facility. How do you think that got leaked?
Facility? I'm confused.
Nike is building a facility. Your boy that owns Nike is building a facility. The buyout is built into the facility, a $20 million facility that if Dan leaves, you got to, like, the school that's paying the buyout has to also pay for the new facility being built. You didn't know about this?
Uh-uh.
Look it up. It's like it was a massive deal, but like, Dan, aliens can come down and Dan, they can't afford that buyout. They could give Phil Knight a space shuttle and a spaceship, and it's not gonna. You can't do it. But again, I don't think Marcus is leaving. The only real place that I think right now there are teams in the NFL that I think he'd leave for. Joe, just being blunt, I think New York at the current moment is a little.
But I don't think it's happening right now, though. I think if he ever did leave, it would be like 5 years from now, 10 years from now,
unless something miraculously came open. Like, I think that there are a lot of coaches that still, regardless of Jerry, would take that job, especially if Steven really starts taking over. I'm trying to think of other
Baltimore, not as much as, but the Chiefs are probably one of those brands.
Pittsburgh, Patriots. Pittsburgh is another one that I think that if it ever came open, I know that it just kind of came open.
Well, so he talked about, maybe in the future he would, but he talked about how he's got on the podcast, he's a really good relationship with Tomlin. And it sounded like he wouldn't have, I think that Pittsburgh was floated out there as an option.
Yeah.
I don't think that he would have wanted to do that because he's got such a close relationship with Tomlin.
Good for Notre Dame, because it comes off to the rest of the nation, whether you're a Notre Dame. Let me tell you what it comes off to the rest of the nation. Alignment. Mm-hmm. Joe, Notre Dame people can think about whatever they want. There's deeper situations. It comes off to the rest of the country if you read and listen to the whole thing as alignment. That I don't think Pete Bavakwa will get enough credit for, but he deserves. Because it's happy people have a hard time leaving.
Well, that's very true. I also think, too, for anyone who'd go say, well, Brian Kelly left out of nowhere. No Notre Dame fan trusted Brian Kelly.
No
one trusted Brian. Seriously, everyone. This is why Notre Dame fans kept trying to tell LSU fans, you can't trust the guy and he's not going to be as good as you think he's going to be, was because he always came off as a used car salesman. And Notre Dame fans always knew someone came along with a Godfather offer. He would take it. I don't think the same feeling and the same sentiment is held by Notre Dame fans currently about Freeman. What? What'd you say?
Like CBS.
Okay, we can't. I think he had to find another job.
No, he had to find another. He was about to get. I think he was going to get sued because in his contract he's got to find other employment. I think he was going to get sued. Regardless, all right. Everyone do us a favor, by the way. Hit that subscribe button down below. We greatly appreciate it. Joe, we continue on our path of doing deep dives for teams. We go into the ACC in the great state of Texas. We talk about the great Southern Methodist University. Joe, when you go into the 2026 season, Kevin Jennings returns. A lot of other players return on that offense as well. Rhett Lashley is back. Your thoughts going into the 2026 season for the Mustangs?
Blake, there's a lot of hype for what SMU can be this upcoming year. They're a team that's ranked in the top 25 of many rankings by pretty much every single outlet. They're regarded as one of the top ACC teams. There's maybe a possibility that some people believe that they could be an ACC playoff representative. Like, I don't know if I can fully go there. I feel like after I dug into what's coming back, but most importantly, their schedule, they have a really rocky path ahead of them. We're going to get to that at the end of this segment. But in terms of what they're bringing back, they have 11 returning starters. They have a lot of experience. So this is going to be huge for them. 11th total returning snaps, 14th in offensive returning snaps, 14th in defensive returning snaps, 10th in games played. They also are 5th in edge snaps, 6th in tight end snaps played, which is nuts. This stat also caught my attention. This does not imply that they're going to win a national title, but it really paints the picture of why having an experienced quarterback is important. 7 of the last 10 national champions entered the season with a quarterback who had accumulated at least 13 career starts and more than 900 career snaps. There are 14 teams in the projected top 25 on CBS Sports, and SMU is one of them with Kevin Jennings. Jennings last year had a pretty up and down year. He threw for 3,600 yards, 26 touchdowns, but he had an abysmal 13 interceptions. He also was not the same type of running threat that I felt like he was 2 years ago. He only had 54 rushing yards. They do have a really underrated offensive line. I really like PJ Williams. I think that he's one of the better tackles in the country. I think that they're going to be able to move the ball on the ground. They should have no issues on offense, but they don't have a lot of returning production. It feels like from last year from their defensive line, and they've got some replacements that they need to figure out on the defensive side of the ball. Like, I feel like overall they've got a solid roster, but there are some question marks and they've got a pretty tough schedule.
Well, their question marks for me does come along that defensive line and replacement that you just talked about. 4 guys from the portal. I mean, none of them come off as, you know, with, I don't want to say massive experience because they do have experience. Joel, it's another one of those situations. I feel like there's a thing. Here's a hot take. This is SMU non-related. Have all of these teams that we keep talking about, okay, as an example, how many times are we going to talk about where they're going to generate pass rush from? How many times are we talking about the inexperience? Am I just crazy? I mean, because I feel like we're in a 9th straight week of talking about, Joe, there was a lot of pass rush, and then all of a sudden – you have a lot of guys being portaled in with a lot of inexperience. This is SMU.
Wait. But to just to reframe that slightly, they're portaling in new guys, but they are bringing guys that are experienced. As I mentioned earlier, they're 5th in edge snaps in the country. So they do have experience there, but it's still complicated building chemistry with a completely new group. Like, the approach is the right approach, but it's a crapshoot. If you're bringing in that many guys to replace your pass rush from last year, your defensive line from last year.
You may be correct. All right. To the main point, but they don't have a lot of
returning guys.
Well, I was just going to say, then there's not a lot of production. Because some of the guys on our lads that are in there, the production, if you have that level of experience, then where's the production? And you don't have a lot of it. That's neither here nor there. We're really where I mean, I guess it's kind of not. I still think it's a problem. We'll see what happens with SMU when you got. We'll talk about the schedule in just a moment. Can we stop asking Kevin Jennings to do things that Kevin Jennings is not good at? Okay. So this is my biggest complaint with Rhett at the current moment in reference to where things currently sit. Can we stop asking him to go back into the pocket 550 plus times per average the last 2 years? That is dumb. Okay. I'm not saying that he's a bad decision maker, but the interceptions say that he may be. Joey Average, he played in 13 games last year. He had 13 interceptions. You can't have an interception a game. That's got to come down. Do I think he's got a lot of ability? Do I think that he reminds me a lot about what we saw in Arkansas to some extent last year in reference to, oh my God, he made a ridiculous play in Taylen Green, to where in the hell is he throwing that football? Actually, I do. They need to stop asking him to do things that are outside of his wheelhouse. And I think they need to change sometimes more than he needs to change, because I see the ability. I see a dude with the ability who quite honestly could take over the ACC if he wanted to. He's got that level of skill set. Just can't he do it? Now, you talked about their offensive line. I really like it. I love the addition with Kevin Jennings being able to get Raphael, who had a really big year last year. By the way, had 34 receptions. I love a back that can catch the football consistently. 34 doesn't sound like a lot from a back. Joe, he had 232 carries the last year alone with 34 receptions. That's like Kywin Lacy type of production in the receiving helm. And by the way, he played in 15-plus games a season ago, or 14, 15 games. I love that addition for him to potentially start taking more load off of him. Because the more times that you're going to continue to make him sit back in the pocket, I don't know if the decision-making is there. In reference to their offensive line, I think it is very solid. I like the experience that they have and the production that they have in the core of their offensive line. And I love the fact that you have some guys returning. Yamir Knight returns. He had 637 yards last year and 5 touchdowns. Jalen Cooper also returns. Theo Orstrom, who is a tight end last year. Now, hold on. Joe, I think this could have been one of the best pulls in the portal. Orstrom, the tight end from A&M. This dude can flat out play. Mm-hmm. Had some guys ahead of him. I thought he would be the heir apparent at tight end for A&M. He is not. I think that they could utilize him in a lot of different ways. I think they got a lot of really good core nucleus along their offense. Can Kevin Jennings reduce? Can Rhett put him in better situations now in year three? The question for me comes, you talk about the experience along the defensive line. Well, then where's the production? You got a lot of that to replace. You return your second level of starters, and you return some good players in your secondary. You return a six-year, or you're bringing in a six-year guy at free safety, by the way, that I think that experience has shown to be very beneficial when you bring in Jimmy Reck or Wyrick. So we'll see as they continue to go, but I do think offensively, if they're going to take that next step, you got to put Kevin Jennings in better positions to make plays. Make him fit, or you fit into what he does best. I feel like that they're trying to take him and fit into what Rhett does, and it hasn't been completely beneficial. The turnovers and interceptions prove that.
I also just want to add one guy in defense that I was reading up on that Zenitz and Hummer had highlighted from the reporting for guys that could break out. Akil Washington was a guy that transferred in from South Alabama 2 years ago that they're super bullish on. So intrigued what happens for him in this linebacker core, that they're bringing back some starters from a year ago. Kevin Jennings, I know that we talk about this a lot when we do these previews. We talk about how said returning quarterback is important for team success, and then blah, blah, blah. We just follow that line. I think that this applies to an even broader degree for SMU, because Kevin Jennings hasn't really evolved past what he was. The version of him that we got in the Penn State game, I think, really showed, hey, this is how he really plays against good opponents. 2024, he had 3,200 passing yards. He had 11 interceptions. He had 3,600 passing yards last season. He had 13 interceptions. He gets sacked a lot too, which was a bit unexpected too for me from digging into his stats. 14 sacks, 2024, 19 in 2025. So he got sacked a lot. But he ran for 354 at least in 2024 and only 54 yards in 2025. I agree with you. I think that Jennings is one of the more athletically gifted quarterbacks. He's got like this point guard style.
He's Rajon
Rondo. That he has.
He's Rajon Rondo with turnover.
Sure. But he moves really well and on the run. And I'd like to see him get a little bit more creative, but like he's got to cut down on the turnovers.
Got to.
If they want to perform better and if they want to be able to finish in some of these games. I mean, his best game last year came against Miami. We need more games like that. Well, I feel like
that, even in that game, not to rudely interrupt you, and even in that game, that brother, we better put some context on that. Because look at what the receivers did and go look at that yak yardage. You remember that upset?
Yeah, there were a lot of Jordan Hudson had a bunch of big plays. I recall that.
What was it, 200 plus yards receiving? And by the way, I'm not trying to say that SMU didn't beat them. Joe, turnover after turnover, fourth down non-conversions. I mean, yes, but that was his best game. And I thought that Jordan Hudson had 200 yards receiving, Joe.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. I think that's important to bring up. And if you look at a lot of their better opponents that they faced, so like when they played Baylor, he had a pick against Baylor. When they played against Clemson, he had an interception. When they played against Wake Forest, he had zero touchdowns and one interception. He had one pick against Cal, who was a solid team last year. And he also had three interceptions and no touchdowns in the bowl game against Arizona. So he has to be
at 11 for 136.
He has to be cleaner in those bigger games. And his impact in terms of efficiency was noted in the fact that he was 59th last year, not middle of the pack, but not great in EPA per drop back. Where I alluded to earlier, though, Blake, their schedule looks tough.
You want to get to
it? Yeah, I was gonna rip through it. So just upcoming year.
I just wanted to point one thing out, if you don't mind. It's not like of last year that he had absolutely massively brutal schedules. Okay. So this is turnovers versus Syracuse. Joe, Syracuse wasn't that great. I mean, outside Miami, was Clemson your toughest opponent, Joe? You know, we talk about SMU. Raphael will be a massive addition. Go look at these games that they lost. You talked about that Baylor game as an example when they, if memory serves me correctly, they lost in double overtime. Okay, fine. Go look at the run game. I think Rhett, to the point that I've been trying to make here, Rhett is going to have to start adapting to more of what his personnel says than him. They have 164 versus Baylor, but Baylor couldn't even stop an Auburn offense last year. Auburn moved the ball on Baylor. So just to put into context, all right, let's go to their schedule. Joe, what are your thoughts?
Okay, so games that I think are auto wins, UC Davis, Missouri State, Boston College, by the way, two FCS teams. Come on now. Versus Boston College versus Stanford. Tough matchups that I think that they win but are going to be tough. Like challenges not to be overlooked. Syracuse and Wake Forest. But this is a long list of games with teams that I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that you beat them. I think that these are all going to be hard, hard games. And it could go either way. Hence why their schedule, their resume, their record rather, could either be 10-2 with an impressive resume actually, or they could be 8-4 and it could be a bit of a lost year. At Florida State, at Louisville, so you're on the road against two big brands in the ACC. We don't know what Florida State's going to be like, but Louisville's bringing back a lot of talent. UVA is one of the teams that's bringing back some of the most experienced rosters in the country. So you get UVA. You got to play Cal, who I think that Juwan Kiwe-Sagopuletele is a really underrated quarterback. He's very talented.
Hold on. You get a round of applause for that. I have pronounced
his name on this show a million times. Juwan Kiwe-Sagopuletele. Hey, man, when I get a kid's name wrong, I try to figure out how to say it. I don't want to do this kid because kid's talented, man. You're going to need to learn how to say his name.
No, I'll do it to a Nico for 2 years and call them by their first names.
Well, you could call him JKS is the other name that a lot of people call him.
Correct.
Virginia Tech, we hyped up because they're bringing back a lot and James Franklin's a good coach. And then you get Notre Dame. I just named 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 opponents that they could theoretically lose to.
And Joe, you want me to tell you some goofy stuff? Mm-hmm. You want to hear something goofy? What happens when you got at Notre Dame and then the next week you got to go at Stanford?
Is it at Notre Dame? I didn't.
It's at Notre Dame, then at Stanford. You can overlook that if you want, but you get beat up in that Notre Dame game, no telling what could happen. I agree with you. I think the first 3 weeks for them are the most critical time and critical venture. And let me tell you why I think UC Davis, it's also very critical for them. They play Florida State on a Monday. That means that you have to have a Tuesday off, probably a Wednesday off, depending. Thursday will be your first day of really kind of wanting to get your guys ready to go again. And then Friday, what do you do, a walkthrough? So even then, are you a lackadaisical week? You know, we saw Clemson go through this when they won. Mm-hmm. By the way, if everybody remembers, when Clemson won the ACC, Joe, remember they lost in week one. They played on a Monday and then played crappy week two, if memory serves me correctly. And I'm pretty sure it was Louisville that knocked them off. Those first 3 weeks are critical for them. At Florida State, at Louisville. Now, we're not building into Florida State. We're not really on that train. I'm never going to overshadow Jeff Brohm and Louisville. I'm not doing it anymore. I think a lot of us have done this the last couple of years. How many times does Louisville got to win 10 games under Brohm before we start taking them seriously? John, I mean, how many times? So the first 3 weeks through their schedule is going to be brutal. I still think Virginia's tough. Who knows what they do at Syracuse? That game's going to be in the Orange Dome. We'll see. Virginia Tech's going to be tough. And then you got Notre Dame to end it. So I think this is 8-4, 9-3 team. I think there's too much.
I think they're 8-4. I think 9-3 would require them to have a really fantastic year. And I think it's possible. But
Kevin Jennings,
8-4.
Well, let me tell you what it take Kevin Jennings to cut those interceptions in half. Because if he does cut them in half at 66% completion, here's the thing that I didn't talk about with Kevin Jennings. That means that that's very likely could go up to 68, 69, 70%. If he does that, Joe, then they can be a 9-3, 10-2 team at max. 13 interceptions is a lot. That's a lot.
No, it is. I mean, that's almost...
That's an interception a game.
That's an interception a game. He had multiple multi-interception games, and he did it back-to-back years where the final game of the year, he threw like three picks. He threw multiple picks against Penn State, and he threw multiple picks, three picks against Arizona. I agree with you that if he cuts that down, and he's been pretty efficient in terms of his completion percentage, there is a world where they do go 10-2. And I'll say this, they have arguably, as far as everything I've looked at so far, they have arguably the hardest schedule in the ACC. And I'll be frank with you, if they go 10-2 at that schedule, I actually would feel pretty vindicated with them getting into the playoff at 10-2 because it's a tough schedule. This is not your typical cupcake. Some of these ACC teams are playing a bunch of nobodies. They're playing the back end of the conference.
You have to slip up to somebody in the ACC. You don't have Miami, right? You don't have Miami. So Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, they do that. I think that they can have a conversation, but they won't have a signature win either. That will be the thing. You can go 10-2 all the long. They might not have a ranked win.
Yeah, I mean, they won't. I mean, Louisville could be a ranked win.
Well,
there could be ranked wins amongst these teams. Like, you know, some of these teams could be, we just don't know who. There's six teams on here that could be ranked.
I'm putting Louisville in my top 25. Y'all can keep sleeping on Jeff Brohm if y'all want to. Why we keep doing that? Bro, he let Miller. They upset my aunt. What are we? And Isaac Brown wasn't even healthy. By the way, I did see clips of EA Sports with Isaac Brown. I'm going to say 9-3, 8-4, 9-3 with you.
Yeah.
Kevin James has got to reduce his turnovers. All right. No super chats. Any thoughts on the misunderstanding of Bryce Underwood? See, you thought I wouldn't get to this, but
I don't think we need to get to it.
I thought it was a massive misunderstanding. I thought the kid said, "Hey, what are you out to prove?" I'm out to prove that I'm the best player to ever come out of Michigan. What was wrong with that?
Yeah, he was the highest rated recruit from the state of Michigan. So that's why I think people overreacted to that. I think people completely overreacted too.
He didn't pull a Trinidad Chambliss. That was more egregious this week than anything. That was egregious.
I guess.
How are you going to say Lane Kiffin's the best play caller on the sidelines in college football and then turn around from Monday to Thursday, turn completely around, you get back in that locker room and start talking crap? Maybe he was going to file another injunction with a judge who wants his autograph after he gives him everything he wants.
Sure.
Joe's going on a vacation. He's leaving me. He didn't even invite me, which is just...
I went on the last vacation with you. Stop it.
Oh, okay. That's true. We will see you again a week from today, unless all hell breaks loose at Big 12 Media Days. Mm-hmm. Thank God Brendan Torres is not there. Joe, have a good vacation, buddy. We'll see y'all soon.
Thank you.
Peace.
Are you ready, kids? The SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise is here. And we're talking officially licensed, as seen on apparel and products at the official Paramount shop. Featuring inclusive sizing and gear for fans of all ages. From premium apparel to must-have accessories, head to paramountshop.com/SpongeBob and use code PODCAST20 to get 20% off. That's PODCAST20 at paramountshop.com/SpongeBob. Don't be a Squidward. Grab your gear today.